fans, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Welcome to the Sunny Side of Sports. It's been a big week for the Gunners of Arsenal. The London-based English Premier League football club introduced the Spaniard Unai Emery as its new manager.
It's a great challenge. In my career, every year, I grow up with a new challenge. And for me, the challenge is a dream came true. I work also with other projects, a big project. For me, I am proud to be here at work after Arsene Wenger.
Unai Emery praised Arsene Wenger, and he thanked him for his legacy. The 68-year-old Wenger was in charge of Arsenal for nearly 22 years, and he's credited with revolutionizing English football through changes to scouting and players' training. Meanwhile, the 46-year-old Emery takes over at Arsenal after leading Paris Saint-Germain to its seventh French League One title. Emery's first news conference as Arsenal's manager came shortly after the club announced a new three-year sponsorship deal with Rwanda. According to the deal, the Gunners will have a Visit Rwanda logo on the left sleeve of the shirts of their senior team, their under-23 team, and their women's team. The deal has excited football fans in Rwanda, as well as in neighboring Uganda and other African countries in the region, where English Premier League football is very popular. Reporter Magumi Davis Rakawinj filed this report from Kampala, Uganda.
In a statement, Rwanda Development Board, or RDB, Chief Executive Officer Claire Akamanzi said Rwanda was thrilled by signing the sponsorship with Arsenal Football Club.
Rwanda is very excited to partner with Arsenal Football Club because we see a partnership that is going to have mutual benefits between our two organizations.
RDB is a body in charge of investment promotion in the country. Rwanda is one of the fastest growing economies in Africa and is rated by the World Bank as the second easiest place to do business in Africa. According to RDB, the country received 1.2 million visitors in 2017. Arsenal Chief Commercial Officer Vinay Vikantashem says Arsenal shirts, which are seen by over 35 million viewers daily worldwide, will help Rwanda to achieve its tourism potential.
We know that at Arsenal Football Club, there's a strong affinity to the club from the people of Africa. And across the continent of Africa, our fan base runs into the many, many hundreds of millions. So for us, when we had the opportunity to partner with Visit Rwanda, there seemed to be a very compelling fit. And of course, Rwanda is a beautiful country with a multitude of visitor attractions.
Rwanda boasts of growing numbers of wildlife, including black rhinos, lions, zebras, chimpanzees, and the famous mountain gorillas. Edmond Kajire, a member of Arsenal Fans Club in Rwanda, says he was elated when he heard that his favorite club was partnering with his country.
Seeing that jersey with Visit Rwanda on the sleeves is heartwarming. It is something that, you know, ignites the passion in you in terms of how you relate with the club and the country at the same time. It was a very great feeling the whole day yesterday. I think it's just sinking in right now.
Kajire says he has supported Arsenal Club since he was 12 years in 1996. But he says now the passion for the club has increased. Bernard Ewalu Olupot, a digital marketing executive in Kampala, Uganda, is an ardent Manchester United fan. He says, despite supporting a rival club, such an initiative is welcome for the continent.
As a hater of Arsenal, this is the one time when I clap my hands and you know, give them a round of applause, because this partnership is brilliant, it's fantastic, it's awesome. I gather that Arsenal players will be visiting Rwanda, you know, and a couple of club coaches will host camps to support the development of football in Rwanda. This is awesome. This is good, not just for Rwanda as a nation, but for Africa as a continent, because now it opens up the continent to investment opportunities.
Asha Komujisha, a sports commentator in in East Africa agrees.
Even, let's say, you know, United fans or Newcastle fans or Manchester City fans who will see, you know, a country like this when their team is, for example, playing against Arsenal, or even when they're just watching football on television, this is something that, you know, they would want to be a part of.
Either RDB or Arsenal Club did not say how much money the sponsorship is worth. For the Sony Side of Sports, I am Mugume, Davis Rwakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
Thanks, Mugume. I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. We're now exactly 3 weeks away to the kickoff of the World Cup football tournament in Russia. In the opening match, June 14th, Russia will host Saudi Arabia in Moscow. Africa will be represented by 5 teams in Russia: the Pharaohs of Egypt, the Atlas Lions of Morocco, the Super Eagles of Nigeria, the Lions of Taranga of Senegal, and the Carthage Eagles of Tunisia. And just from a nickname standpoint, I think it's safe to say Africa will be represented by a pride of lions and a flock of eagles. That's right, I'm talking about Atlas Lions. I'm talking about Lions of Taranga, Super Eagles, Carthage Eagles, Pride of Lions, Flock of Eagles. The Super Eagles of Nigeria are getting ready for 3 international friendly warm-up matches against the Democratic Republic of Congo, England, and the Czech Republic before kicking off their World Cup campaign June 16th against Croatia in Kaliningrad, Russia. Now, some analysts have described the Super Eagles as the underdog in their World Cup group, which also includes Iceland and 2-time World Cup champion Argentina. Victor Izagi is a former striker for the Super Eagles, who also lifted the African Champions League trophy with Enyimba FC. Reporter Iron Mike Mbonye in Port Harcourt asked Victor, do you think Nigeria is the underdog in its World Cup group?
Well, I don't agree that Nigeria is the underdog of that group, because going into the World Cup, you can see that we have the youngest squad so far, and these guys are people that can outrun any defense any day, any time. So they are not the underdogs for me.
How would you rate the quality of players we have in camp now, those who have been invited?
Well, it's same guys that have prosecuted the qualifiers, except some few that have been added to it, and we've seen them play. All they need to get nice, to be motivated properly, and then bring out their hearts to play, knowing fully well they're playing for Nigeria. If they're able to do that, I'm sure we'll get to places in this World Cup.
Do you see them matching 2-2, ball-to-ball against Argentina, Croatia, and Iceland?
Of course, of course. You know, these are guys they play week in, week out. Some of them play week in, week out within their league. So I don't see any reason why they cannot match out them. You know, they will always look at us like we're coming from Africa, we don't have what it takes to be there. But I believe these guys have what it takes to be there.
Looking at some of our players, Victor Moses of Chelsea, Iheanacho of Leicester City, the midfielder Wilfred Ndidi, how would you rate them in the just concluded English Premiership season?
Well, they've done well. We can see Iheanacho came to limelight after we 32, 33, he started scoring goals. And that's the kind of form we want him to replicate in the World Cup. If he's able to take that same form to the World Cup, scoring goals in every game, I think we'll do far much better. We've got Winifred Ndidi, who is very solid in the middle. We've also got Iwobi, who is doing so well for Arsenal. So we've got players. Ighalo has been scoring of late, you know, in his Chinese league. You know, the most important thing is for them to play so well and ensure that they score goals. Because if you don't score goals, you can never win any game without goal scoring.
That's Victor Izagi, a former striker for Nigeria's national football team, the Super Eagles. And Victor was talking with reporter Iron Mike Mbonye in Port Harcourt, Nigeria. I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America.
They're playing back.
The National Basketball Association playoffs continue later Thursday night in Houston, Texas. That's where the Houston Rockets will host the defending champion Golden State Warriors in Game 5 of the Western Conference Finals. This best-of-seven series is tied at 2 games each after Houston edged Golden State 95-92 on Tuesday night. In playoff action Wednesday night, the Boston Celtics, winners of a record 17 NBA championships, move closer to another trip to the NBA Finals. Associated Press reporter Gethin Coolbaugh tells us more from Boston, Massachusetts.
The Boston Celtics are 1 win away from going back to the NBA Finals after a 96-83 win over the Cleveland Cavaliers in Game 5 of the Eastern Conference Finals Wednesday. Jason Tatum scored a team-high 24 points, Jaylen Brown added 17, and Al Horford had 15 with 12 rebounds. The Celtics improved to 10-0 at home this postseason. Horford credits the fans for the team's success at home.
Here I just think that our guys just feel, you know, comfortable and good. You know, it's credit, the atmosphere that's here. It's just a lot of fun to play in right now.
LeBron James finished with 26 points, 10 rebounds, and 5 assists for Cleveland.
I look forward to seeing us respond on Friday night. And I know how well we've played at home, you know, in this postseason. You know, and that's the only thing I can worry about right now. You know, I'm not worried about a game 7. You have to worry about game 6. And, you know, you can't, you know, put yourself in that moment until you take care of the present.
Kevin Love had 14 points and 7 boards. Game 6 is Friday in Cleveland. Gethin Coolbaugh, Boston.
Thanks, Gethin. Once again, it's must win for LeBron James and the Cleveland Cavaliers on Friday night in Cleveland. They trail the Boston Celtics 3-2 in the NBA's Eastern Conference Finals. In more NBA news, French center Rudy Gobert of the Utah Jazz led the voting for the 2017-2018 NBA All-Defensive Team. The 2.16-meter-tall Gobert was joined on the first team by Anthony Davis of the New Orleans Pelicans, Jrue Holiday, also of the Pelicans, Victor Oladipo of the Indiana Pacers, and Robert Covington of the Philadelphia 76ers. The NBA will be holding its annual awards ceremony on June 25th, and the Defensive Player of the Year is one of the trophies to be handed out, and I'd say Rudy Gobert of the Jazz is a favorite to win that award. I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Here in Washington, there's lots of sporting excitement after the city's National Hockey League team, the Washington Capitals, advanced to the Stanley Cup Finals for the first time in 20 years. The Capitals skated past the host Tampa Bay Lightning Wednesday night, 4-0 in Florida, to win the Eastern Conference Finals 4-3. The Capitals will now travel west to take on the Vegas Golden Knights in the Stanley Cup Finals. Game 1 in the best-of-seven championship series is Monday night in Las Vegas, Nevada. The Golden Knights, a first-year expansion club, have upset the odds, and they're now in the unlikely position of skating for the Stanley Cup. My VOA colleague Jim Stevenson tells us more about the team, and Jim also has other sports news.
Old players considered past their prime, young, unproven players, mediocre veterans. These are the cast-offs who usually come together when an expansion team is formed. But beware, they might just come back to haunt the rest of the league.
We didn't say come in here and say, well, we're going to score, be a high-scoring team, or we didn't come in here and say we're going to be a defensive team. We came in here and said we want to be a good team.
George Gallant, affectionately known as Turk, is the head coach of the Las Vegas Golden Knights, the newest team in North America's professional National Hockey League. From the start, the Golden Knights were good.
It started from day one. The guys work hard and they do their jobs and they know their roles in our hockey club and just go out there and play your game.
General Manager George McPhee has been impressed with the quality of play and drive the Golden Knights have shown in proving themselves on the ice.
Despite some of the age differences, it's a very mature group. It's a high character group. We don't want a bunch of clones. We've never wanted a bunch of clones either in the front office or anywhere else in the organization or with the players. They're all different. They have different lifestyles. But when we come to the rink, that's where, you know, they become one.
Through their first season this year, Turk led the Golden Knights to expansion team records while demolishing opponents in the Pacific Division with an impressive 51-24-7 record.
It was a process from the first game of the season, and, guys had different opportunities to play in the last minutes of game. Guys have played power play situations that guys haven't played before. So, you trust your team, you trust your players, and so far they give me no reason not to trust them. They do their job, they do the best they can, and some nights it doesn't go perfect, but they go out there and they work hard and they compete hard and they all play for our team.
The Las Vegas Golden Knights finished fifth in the NHL with 109 points, shattering records for first-year teams and reaching the playoffs.
Doesn't matter what people said that, we have no chance to make the playoffs or, we're going to lose in the first round. It didn't matter to our guys. Our guys just come to the rink, they work hard and they have fun. And expectations, we'll come here and do the best we can and see what happens. And there's been no pressure on our guys, and there's still no pressure on our guys. Come to the rink, have fun, and enjoy your time.
They swept the Los Angeles Kings in the first round, defeated the San Jose Sharks in six games in the second round. Now they've defeated the Winnipeg Jets in five games in the conference final.
We're in the Stanley Cup Finals, but it doesn't really feel like it's been a grind. It doesn't feel like it's a Stanley Cup Final right now. It's our guys are fresh, they're ready to go.
George McPhee remembers the last time he was with a team skating for a championship two decades ago as GM of the Washington Capitals.
We're not satisfied with just getting here. We've all been around the game long enough to know you don't get these opportunities very often. And some of us, it's been 20 years, so you've got to try to win it now.
McPhee and Girard both played professional hockey themselves years ago, and Turk says the Golden Knights may have room for one more player as they skate for Lord Stanley's Cup.
The way me and George played, he was a competitive, hard-nosed player and worked hard. I think so, yeah, we find a spot for him. Fourth line.
The National Hockey League has announced it will play a second pair of exhibition games in China this September. The Boston Bruins and Calgary Flames will face off September 15th in Shenzhen near Hong Kong and in Beijing September 19th. The Los Angeles Kings and Vancouver Canucks skated in Beijing and Shanghai last year. China has been a market for expansion by other American sports leagues, including the National Basketball Association and National Football League. The NHL decision comes ahead of the 2022 Winter Olympics in Beijing. Cody Dishka is marketing director for Ice Hockey Australia in Brisbane. He says a second year of preseason games in China is the latest sign that the sport is growing across Asia.
They're going pretty gangbusters with the ramping up of the 2022 Beijing Olympics. Obviously, having a hockey team there will they'll need to be a reputable team and be able to compete on a world level. So I think they're growing the sport pretty quickly in their country, and same goes with Australia and throughout Australasia.
Part of the reason for the growth of ice hockey and other Western professional leagues in China is the growing wealth of the nation.
Yeah, definitely. Not to get too political. They're obviously interested in Western lifestyle, sports, culture, that sort of stuff. So, I guess they obviously have a following in the NBA and baseball and that sort of stuff as well. So I think hockey is probably no different from that.
Ice hockey is gaining popularity not only in China, but also in Australia.
Australia and ice hockey goes back a long, long ways. I think 1908 is when Ice Hockey Federation was formed, and that makes it one of the oldest federations in the world. So we've been playing ice hockey here for a long, long time. I guess our challenge is just need the infrastructure to catch up with the level of interest here.
Cody Dushka says the 2022 Beijing Olympics should help boost ice hockey as teams play and come to train ahead of the games.
Thinking about Australian ice hockey, the biggest thing we need here is, like I said, more more infrastructure. So, you know, if some of these teams are coming to Asia or even Australia to train for the 2022 Olympics, that exposure and that, I guess, that experience for those players, and, you know, see that ice hockey is a sport in Australia that's being played, it's very popular here, I guess it can only help us out. So we're ramping up for the Olympics as well, so whether that be building rinks or, getting our teams to the World Championships. But that is our ultimate aim here, is obviously grow the sport to a much higher level.
Over the past 3 years, the NHL has sponsored regular youth and coaching clinics in Shanghai, Beijing, and other Chinese cities. David Proper, the league's executive vice president of international strategy, expects the NHL to hold up to 15 youth clinics all over the country this year. The NHL is also reportedly in discussions with the Beijing Ministry of Education to introduce ball hockey into local schools. The Belgian knockout near Antwerp was the first European Tour golf event to be held in Belgium in 18 years. Only one player was not knocked out of the elimination format, Spaniard Adrian Otegi.
After the first four holes, I started making birdies and I felt great. I held some putts, so yeah, very, very good, very happy with the match.
And he loved the unique format, with fans so close to the action.
It was quite special as well to have the crowds in the fairway behind you, and it was very cool. The course was also like small, so the crowds looked closer to the players. They were great.
Benjamin Hébert finished two shots behind for his best finish of his European Tour career.
I did my best. Was a bit tired for the final, but there is a lot of positive things to learn about this week. That's good.
He's a fan of the different fan-friendly and fast-paced format.
It puts you under pressure almost every hole, because everything can happen. I think it's a great idea. I heard a lot of positive things, especially from spectators or guys on TV who say that it's very fun to follow and watch. So I think it's very good format.
The John Deere Classic Golf Tournament isn't until July, but it's on the radar of at least one PGA Tour player who can't wait to get back on the TPC Deer Run course in Silvis, Illinois.
The uniqueness of how you have to play certain shots off the tee. You can't just hit driver, bomb it everywhere. You got to be precise and strategic out there, and that's what I like about it.
Last year, Bryson DeChambeau earned his first and only PGA Tour win so far by a single stroke over Patrick Rogers to put him alongside some very good first-time winners.
There's just something about that place that makes winners, and it was just fantastic, and I'll never forget my first win there.
An unusual fact, all of DeChambeau's irons and wedges are cut to exactly the same length, just under 1 meter. Their lie and bounce angle are also the same, only the lofts are different.
How can we take out as many variables as possible? That's what I'm trying to do, and we've done it. Now it's just about fine-tuning. What I'm learning out here is how to hit certain trajectories, certain shots in different conditions.
DeChambeau also uses the largest grips commercially available as he aims for another win.
Thanks for that spicy sports package, Jim. That's my Voice of America colleague, Jim Stevenson. I'm VOA Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the sunny side of sports on The Voice of America. With 21 days to go to the World Cup football tournament in Russia, how about another fun World Cup fact for our VOA listeners? 21 is also the number of players who've experienced the joy of lifting the World Cup trophy twice. Not surprisingly, as five-time World Cup champions, Brazil accounts for the largest contingent of multiple winners. 14 of the players who contributed to Brazil's first World Cup championship in 1958 also played a part in the second World Cup trophy in 1962. 8 years later, 1970, only one member of Brazil's 1962 squad remained, the great Pelé, the only player in World Cup history to have lifted the trophy three times. The Brazilians are in Group E at Russia 2018, along with Switzerland, Costa Rica, and Serbia. The Brazilians will play the Swiss June 17th in the opening World Cup match for both teams. And that wraps up the May 24th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer Wojtek Zorniak. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the sunny side of sports.
I get it.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In a number of developing countries, democracy is in decline. That's because a democratic political culture requires a vibrant civil society sector and an independent media to keep the citizens well informed about the actions and performance of government institutions and officials. Only then do citizens have the means to freely influence public policies. But a free flow of information is anathema to autocrats and would-be dictators. So, despite all the technical developments since the turn of the century, which should improve access to information and social participation, including internet access, greater mobile phone ownership, and easy-to-use digital media platforms, the flow of information is being choked off. In recent years, dozens of governments have passed restrictive laws and regulations that diminish the ability of civil society organizations to register, operate freely, or receive foreign funding. At the same time, print, on-air, and digital news outlets and those who report and publish the news are restricted, shut down, and silenced, while journalists and editors are harassed, attacked, detained, and even murdered. Indeed, according to Freedom House, just 13% of the world's population enjoys a free press, a media environment where coverage of political news is robust, the safety of journalists is guaranteed, state intrusion in media affairs is minimal, and the press is not subject to onerous legal or economic pressures. At the same time, around 67% of all internet users live in countries where criticism of the government, military, or ruling family are subject to censorship. For that reason, the U.S. Agency for International Development, or USAID, is helping to strengthen the legal environment for civil society in over 20 countries, works with local organizations globally to combat growing repression, expand civic space, and strengthen civil society, supports worker organizations to advance worker rights and access to justice in 27 countries, and helps provide civil society, independent media organizations, bloggers, and advocates with mentoring tools and techniques to bolster their information technology capacity and protect their security online. The stakes are high. In some countries, civil society and the media are the only institutions that keep power in check. Through USAID's many programs, the U.S. government works to keep them running.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Hello, I'm Douglas Impoga, host of VOA's Reporters Roundtable. Join us every Thursday as we discuss important African topics and events. I'll have a panel of African journalists and expert guests to discuss the topic at hand. We take a deeper look at important African news topics. That's Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
VOA Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
Hi, this is Victor Beatty, managing editor of VOA News. Tune in to the Voice of America's newscasts every hour on the top of each hour, 24/7. Listen to our news and correspondent reports from around the world. VOA is your trusted source for news and information.